This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. In the United States, we spend about $20 billion a year on our foster care system, but what are we getting for the money? There are many stories of a broken system and psychological damage to the children. Author Chris Beam spent 5 years tracking the stories of some children in foster care. Her book is To the End of June, The Intimate Life of American Foster Care. Welcome to The Source, Chris.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And we also open up our phone lines. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. If you've got questions or comments about foster care system here in Texas. So Chris, you track these children in the foster care system for 5 years. You really are putting a human face on a very complicated issue, and you cut through so many issues. Was that your plan? Did you start out writing this book?
I started this book because I'm a foster mom, and I came into it sort of through a circuitous route. I had been a high school teacher, and my daughter was in a group home, and they were going to put her into juvenile hall because they didn't have any more beds for her. And it seemed like such an outrage because she hadn't committed a crime, and I took her in. And then they said, hey, you know, you're not licensed. After she had settled, after she had grown attached, all of a sudden they realized that I wasn't licensed. And they said, we're going to take her out of your place and put her into a home for sex offenders. And that was another shock. And I said, wait, she's not a sex offender. She can't go in there. And so we found a way to sort of trick the system and keep her with me. But in both cases, the system that was designed to protect her actually ended up endangering her. And I thought, this is I had heard outrageous stories before, but I was so outraged and surprised that I wanted to look more closely at it. And, you know, as I looked more deeply, I found that there were those kinds of tragic stories, but then there were also really amazing people doing amazing, amazing work as well. I mean, it's not just one sort of black and white problem. Otherwise, we'd have fixed it long ago.
There's a recent story in Austin, right, of a little girl, 2-year-old girl, Alex Hill. She was taken away from her biological parents because they were found to be smoking marijuana, and they were right. She was put in a foster home, and then she died apparently at the hands of abuse from her foster parents. This has brought up an issue here about the willingness of these of the administration to take away children and put them in foster care without really thinking about, you know, how is that helping the child sometimes?
Right. You know, and that story is horrific and tragic, and it's sickening. And these are the stories that make national news and make us say, wait a minute, what's happening? And while I don't want to undermine the horror of what happened to that child, the fact of the matter is, it's no small trauma to remove a child from her home and be put in with a decent foster parent either, you know. The fact is, she should not have been removed in the first place for a parent smoking pot. This is my particular opinion. And kids are removed often for that. The New York Times ran a series about that happening in New York, where parents who could not be arrested for possession, they didn't have enough marijuana to be arrested, had their kids removed because they had enough to warrant a removal. Now, you know, this is the kind of thing where we need sort of a more sophisticated, nuanced decision-making around when a child should be removed. There are cases where children should definitely be removed. I personally am not in favor of keeping the kids with the parents at all costs, because there are parents who truly do not love their children. I mean, there are people that will disagree with me, but there are parents who cannot function and do not love their children. We should be removing those kids. But it takes a sophisticated and nuanced investigator to really go in and look, because whenever you remove a kid, you're going to have trauma, even if you're putting that kid with a good, loving family. It's traumatic.
And there's a big difference between removing a child from their home and the termination of the parental rights.
Right.
And
right.
That causes a lot of complications.
Right. I mean, the goal of foster care as an institution overall is to remove a child temporarily so that the parents can overcome whatever challenges they're going through so that the child can return home. It's a temporary solution. That's the idea of it. But what happens a lot of times is it's not as simple as that. The parents need more time to get themselves together. The parents, it's not quite clear whether they're going to. And then sometimes the parents' rights get terminated, and then the child is available for adoption. If the child is an older child, if the child has, expressed some of that trauma, because it is traumatic to be removed, and then is labeled with all kinds of acronyms like oppositional defiance or learning disorders or all kinds of things that they get labeled with because they're expressing that trauma, they're not as easy to be adopted. I mean, we've got 100,000 kids in this country right now whose parents' rights have been terminated, and they're available for adoption. And so these are not kids who are going to go back to their biological families, and they need homes.
Many of these children are dealing with the psychological after effects of being removed from their parents and then often being placed in homes, multiple placements sometimes, the feeling of abandonment, not being around your parents, sometimes taking on the blame themselves even though they had nothing to do with it. It's tough being one of those kids.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we don't, that I think foster care as an institution doesn't manage very well. I mean, it's a lot easier to, this is what I've found, it's a lot easier to check off the boxes, does the foster home have enough square feet to house a child? Does it have the proper bed? Are they meeting the necessary medical checkups? Are they meeting the child's educational needs? But really reaching a child psychologically and emotionally, that's a lot harder to measure. So we're not really checking for that. And, you think about, there's a psychiatrist at Columbia who was a foster child, and she talks a lot about the way that trauma forecloses grief. And so we're not dealing with the kid's grief because the trauma covers it up. And they're really grieving. They've been taken from their parents. And, if you think about, if your spouse suddenly died, we wouldn't say to you, oh, sorry, your spouse died. Here's a new husband. Move in with him tomorrow. And yet we do that to children every day. We say, here's a new parent. Love him. And then when the kid can't love and can't attach on sight, we blame the child very often for not being able to attach immediately. And when the kid wets the bed or the kid has problems, we send the kid back to the agency and say, this kid is a problem child. And unfortunately, we don't have the training and support for the foster parents to really manage these kids. So it ends up being a cycle where the kids go in and out of homes again and again and get that feeling repeated that they're unlovable, they're unwanted, they're unreachable, etc.
And frequently that acting out behavior is they're testing the system to see if that person really does care for them or love them, and then that's
right.
What kind of, makes things go south pretty quickly.
Right. Well, they're testing, a fundamental
I got to take a quick little break.
Sure.
But we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about your book and about the foster care system in America. The name of the book is To the End of June. Chris Beam is our author. And like I said, we're talking about foster care. We'd love to hear from our audience. Give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. .45 on KSTX 89.1 FM, your public radio station in San Antonio for news and views. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with Chris Beam. She's the author of the book To the End of June, The Intimate Life of American Foster Care. Now, on the cover of the book, there is a young man. He's striking a pose like a superhero would, one of invulnerability and defiance, but he's wearing ill-fitting clothes. He looks like he really hasn't had very many good meals, and here is sort of an expression on his face of vulnerability. Do you know this child?
No, you know, it's so funny when you do a book, you don't have a whole lot. I mean, I got to choose my title, but the marketing department really creates the picture. And while I like the picture, he's not one of the kids in the book. And so at first I was kind of like, who is this kid? This kid isn't the kid in the book. I want, you know, one of the real kids. And yet I realized that it does become kind of interesting because people can project all kinds of stories onto this kid and imagine things. I like that he's defiant and strong, because a lot of foster kids are really defiant and strong, and there is a kind of vulnerability there, and that's true for a lot of the kids that I know.
So you picked the title To the End of June. What do you mean by that?
You know, it's in honor of one of the kids that I know. I followed a girl named Fatima. And Fatima's a wonderful kid. What I did for the book was I followed a few foster families quite closely for 5 years. So I went kind of deep rather than broad. It's not a book of studies. It's a book of narrative stories. And I followed the good foster families, families that really loved their kids and wanted to do right by them. And Fatima had been through 21 homes before she fell in with this foster family that really loved her and wanted to adopt her. And all along, you know, Fatima's parental rights had been terminated when she was about 7. She went into the system when she was 5. And she went through 21 homes, and all along she'd been told, you know, if you get adopted, everything will be fine. And so she sort of held this up as a promise, you know, like, well, when I get adopted, I'll finally have a family and I'll be loved and everything will be okay. Well, she moved in with the Greens when she was 16, and when she was 17, finally, at the end of this journey, she was going to get adopted. So she was writing a book about her stories and about her 21 homes, and she was calling it Until November, because that was when she was going to be adopted. And Fatima, the adoption got pushed back because of the courts. This often happens, so she was disappointed. And then it was happening in June, so she called her book To the End of June. She did get adopted in June, and what happened was her life wasn't fixed. You know, it was. She was glad to be adopted, but her pain didn't go away. Her trauma wasn't healed. You know, she still lived in the family with 11 kids. She wasn't the center of everything, and she still had all of her pain inside. And so she gave up being a writer. She gave up on a lot of things, actually. I really love Fatima, and I feel for her. And when she decided to stop being a writer and she gave up on her book, I asked her if I could use the title sort of in honor of her.
All right. Well, let's go to our phone calls. The number is 614-8980. Lee is calling in. Lee, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question. Where can a couple find an agency that is ethical when trying to adopt or foster?
The two things are a little bit different, although it's great that you want to. That's fantastic, first of all. And so what you want to do is, are you looking to adopt? Is that your ultimate goal?
We're open to both, but we would like foster to adopt and do that transition too.
That's fantastic. That's so good. You know what? Read about them. Read about the ones and read about what the, this is my suggestion at least, read about the caseloads that the caseworkers have, because you want caseworkers that don't have tremendous caseloads so that they can give you a little bit more attention. Because, you know, in Texas and in most states, actually, what happens is there's state agencies that work with private, they contract with private agencies. And then work with one that's relatively close to your house. You don't want to be schlepping forever. And then as far as ethical, you know, it's read about them. There'll be reviews. It's not like there are any that are necessarily unethical. It's just that my experience with most agencies, they're overloaded and they don't give you a lot of time. So it's really about you caring about the kid and doing the bulk of the legwork. That's really, unfortunately, the experience, you know. You doing it because you care about it. It's not like the agencies are evil and are going to try to mess you up. It's that they're all kind of overworked and taxed.
All right, Lee, thank you for that question, Lee. So let me ask you, Chris Beam, people, we hear about these kids, we're talking about the how stressed out they are. Does that mean that they are damaged and it is really going to be a lot of work for someone to be their foster parent?
Each kid is different, you know. Each kid is really, really different. But you can't read the case file on a kid and see that they've been labeled all these things, oppositionally defiant and so forth, because every kid gets labeled that and make a decision that way. You have to meet the kid. But you know what? It's the most amazing work you can do. I mean, if you're drawn to this kind of work, if you're drawn to watching kids grow, the growing process is so fast. They also, this is my experience at least, is they need so much. The need is so great, and the ability to help is so, the ways you can help are so vast that it's incredible. But it is kind of, you don't get a lot of reward until a couple years down the line. Has been my experience, because the kids will, some of them are a little bit traumatized. I wouldn't say they're damaged, like fundamentally damaged, but there has been trauma.
Okay.
So there's a little resistance at first. But again, the rewards, I mean, my daughter is now 30, and she's the most glorious thing in my life. You know, I feel like the luckiest person in the world to have her.
All right, back to the phones. The number is 614-8980. Catherine is on the line. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you all?
Doing great.
Hi. I'm a teacher here in Texas, and we are currently, my school district, in a court battle to try and block a foster mother from having future foster children. She had a foster child who was schizophrenic and suicidal, and the foster mother's own mental difficulties were exacerbating the situation and created a very horrible home situation for the child. And I'm curious about what kind of mental health screening goes into potential foster parents.
All right. Thank you for that question, Catherine.
That's a great question. You know what's so interesting? One of the things that I found in my research is that we do a lot of national studies on the foster kids themselves, you know, outcome reports and these kinds of things, and we have very little broad studies on the foster parents, who they are, what their demographic background is, and so on. And the truth of the matter is we are in such desperate need of foster parents that in many cases, it's sort of county by county and city by city and state by state. So I don't want to speak too broadly here. But in many places, we're so desperate for foster parents that kind of take what we can get.
Well, that case that we mentioned earlier, the Alex Hill, the 2-year-old girl in Austin.
Yeah, she had priors.
The foster parents had a history of criminal activity, and they still qualified as foster parents.
Right. And I really think that the issue here is that we need to make foster parenting, we need to change the conversation a little bit and really work on making foster parenting an honorable thing to do. And, you know, people talk about people doing it for the money. The money is so negligible, but it's not about money. It's really about making it something honorable, thinking about these kids as worthwhile members of our society. You know,
a question that we got from one of our listeners online is like, what are these people? What do they really make that much money for being a foster parent?
No. You know, these numbers are all online, so it varies state by state. I'm not sure what the Texas numbers are, but, you know.
I'm sure they're not high. It's Texas, after
you know,
all.
It depends on what, you know, each child is slightly different in terms of what their special needs are and so on. But it's anywhere from $350 a month to $500 and some a month, depending on the kid and their needs. So when you're thinking about, especially a teenager, if you're thinking about, you know, feeding the kid, clothing the kid, and then if you love the kid, you know, getting the kid any special therapies or extra tutoring or letting him be in a sports team or anything, we're not talking about a lot. So you're not getting really compensated. You're not getting any health insurance for your job. You're not getting any life insurance. You're not getting anything. You're really getting, you know, a few cents an hour here. So I think it needs to be better respected. It needs to be compensated better. This is my opinion. And it needs to be better screened, you know, because right now there are amazing foster parents. There are some that are so incredible. And then there are horrific ones. And these are at the at the ends of the spectrum. And in the middle, there are a lot of very mediocre foster parents. And the kids deserve better than that.
So your book, To the End of June, An Intimate Life of American Foster Care, is this an inspiring book? Because some people may be afraid to pick it up because they think it may be a Debbie Downer.
It's really not. I mean, I think that that's the thing. I think people are afraid to think about foster care because they think of it as a sort of like fait accompli, like, ugh, it's a system that hasn't changed and doesn't change. And actually, you know, it's changing all the time. I mean, even the state of Texas right now is as I understand it, is going through a redesign, you know, being overseen by Chapin Hall, which is a really wonderful progressive institution where they're working on keeping the kids closer to home and not moving them so far across the state. It's an institution that's always changing, and we're really understanding that kids can't be warehoused in group homes anymore. They need families. We're talking about, I mean, in 2011, Obama opened up this thing called the waiver system, which allowed states to apply for sort of bulk bulk income to come in rather than getting paid on a per diem basis, which changes the fee structure of foster care, doesn't require kids to be removed from their homes in order to get money for the agencies.
So the children in the book, you're still keeping in contact with them?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're doing good?
They're mostly, you know, it's up and down, but they're mostly doing well. And yeah, if you read it, you'll see they're real people with real stories. And no, I don't think it's Debbie Downer. I think it's a complicated conversation that we need to sort of open up.
Putting a human face on a very complicated issue in America that has real people involved. Chris Beam, author of To the End of June, The Intimate Life of American Foster Care. Thank you for joining us on The Source.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We will be back on Monday.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.